So here we are on our, you could say, our last day of this residency together. You know, that we really have come together as this community, and we have this last full day of practice. And hopefully you'll get a sense, especially this afternoon, that this last day is also a beginning. And that's something that we'll kind of explore this afternoon too, is the beginning of your next retreat. As I said, they just kind of are intertwined, the next one after another, as I mentioned on that first weekend retreat. Because it comes down just to you could say these two simple words. Somebody was asking Bhikkhu Bodhi, who's really this great translator. I feel indebted to him because he brought so much of these the discourses of early Buddhism into English. And he was saying that the two things that we need to remember about practice is to begin and to continue. And that's all we're doing today, is we're beginning again and continuing. And so that's what I'd like to share with you, some reflections on this beginning again and continuing. Before we go into that, I just want to invite you just to make sure, it sounds like you've already done this, but just to say hello to the people sitting next to you, since you'll be sitting in silence with them. You probably know them, but just a little hello to the people in front of you, behind you, and to the sides of you. Okay, great, thank you. And it is quite a special day, probably on many different levels. One of the things I like about Buddhism coming into, you could say, this modern world is how that we adapt to the culture that we're in, you know, especially around holidays, you know, around Thanksgiving. What a great time to practice this wholesome quality of gratitude. And Christmas, the importance of generosity, or New Year, you know, something similar to what we've been exploring, the importance of intention. And today, Groundhog Day. Right? The importance of absurdity in our practice. So necessary, don't you think? A little bit of humor. And actually, the other ramifications of that, I'm sure many of you know that, what was that movie in the early 90s, Groundhog Day, with Bill Murray? Right after I was a monk, well, not right after, but one of the jobs I got was I was working nights at a drug rehabilitation center, which actually turned out really to be a sweet job because I designed a meditation program for them. But that was such a key movie for recovery. Just for those of you who'd seen it, it's just the same day, one after another, and what changes it? How is our mind relating to this day? And it fits so well, I think, with what we're doing here. Really, and I'll be going into that much more because it fits in so much with this theme of wisdom, this last aspect of the Sila Samadhi Panya that we're exploring. So Groundhog Day and its absurdity and also in its wisdom. And I want to emphasize too, as we begin, yes, this is our last day together in this formation. This is our last day of this residency. And I'd like to point out how rare it is for us to have a day of silence. It can, especially for those of you who have done a lot of retreats, it's like, okay, one more, chuck, you know, tick that one off. And we can forget what a rare thing it is to actually be in a community where we get to offer each other silence. something so powerful about silence. I was just feeling that this morning, just the silence of being with others. You know, there's something palpable about it and a depth to it. It reminds me of, I grew up in Colorado, so it reminds me especially cross-country skiing in the backcountry, which probably many of you are familiar with, and the quality of silence when there's a lot of snow, there's like a depth to that kind of silence that can draw us in. And I feel like retreat space has that similar quality of silence, even when there's noise around, that depth of silence that we can be drawn into. And today is going to be a day where we bring everything together, all these things that we've been exploring. So sila. So again, on this retreat, we're undergoing these agreements, or I'm asking all of you to agree to this basic quality of ethical conduct that I went over during the first weekend retreat. You know, basically these five precepts that you find in Buddhism, the intention not to harm any living being today. Of course, we might mistakenly harm, but not intentionally harming, not stealing, not reaching out to one another sexually, so there can be a quality of sexual safety. Again, sexuality can be such a beautiful expression of connection and kindness and love, but we're setting that aside today. And then, of course, offering each other silence, which is an expression of non-harming through our speech. And then not taking intoxicants to intentionally cloud the mind, so that we're intentionally clearing the mind. And just that, I want to point out, if that's the only thing you get out of today, today's a really good day. You know, is again, Phil, I so appreciate you framing our previous retreat around this. What a thing to celebrate, just that. You know, just that is enough today. What a wonderful thing to bring into the world. And then also we're taking this day to cultivate this quality of cultivation. And for those of you who were on the weekend retreat, remember I spoke about this Pali word bhavana, which is usually translated as cultivation, like metta bhavana, or you could even say samadhi bhavana. It's used in many different contexts. And I shared with you to imagine the environment the Buddha was in, being surrounded by these fields, these agricultural fields, people working in the fields, the earthiness, the messiness, the chaos that can come in the world of cultivation, and how we can be, how little control that we have over growing. It's a messy process. And that's what we're engaged in today, this process of cultivation, cultivating mindfulness. And the other aspect of the last retreat was just this willingness to be present. So it's the same thing, just this willingness to be present. Two qualities that I went over, being aware, noticing what's going on, and that acceptance, like a grandparent to an idealized grandparent to a grandchild. Like, you know, grandkids can be crazy in all kinds of ways. But it's like there's a way to hold that with a soft heart, there, present, holding. Not in a confining way, or a fearful or an angry way. And I also shared with you, this is the turning of the rudder that I went over. Just that slight shift of the image I gave with you. It's such a simple thing, like right now, making that shift, feeling the body sitting right now. Feeling the breath right now. Noticing how the sound of my voice, it comes and it goes. Again, can you feel the shift? It's slight, isn't it? But when I encourage you to do that, can you feel like, oh, I'm listening differently. I'm now in the room differently. It feels a little bit different. I'm here with the body. It's not just understanding my words. You might feel like, oh, there's a little bit of me here now. Just that slight shift. That's all we're doing today. This is what it is to cultivate the wholesome, to develop the wholesome. So we got the sila, cultivating the wholesome, developing the wholesome, or the skillful. We'll use the word skillful, developing that which is skillful. And then in terms of the willingness to be present, of being aware and accepting, making that slight shift. As I shared with you before, develop that which is skillful. It is possible to develop the skillful. If it were not possible to develop the skillful, I would not tell you to do so. But because it is possible to develop the skillful, therefore, I tell you to develop the skillful. And then he goes on to say, because it leads to our pleasure and to our freedom. And then on Wednesday, I want to bring in this encouragement that I invited you to explore, was to bring mindfulness into your daily activities. And today, the great thing is we're not just, you know, I'm not going over kind of the preliminary stuff of this retreat that I usually do. We get to start in a very different place because we've gone over all that stuff. Can you have the intention today, the willingness to have a continuity in your mindfulness? So in the sitting meditation, in the walking meditation, and very importantly, in the in-between times, what it's like to actually stand up, the feeling of that, opening a door, turning the body around, getting a drink of water. Again, just this really gentle being present with that, because that's what gives, is going to give today momentum and depth. And I for me, what I remember around continuity that allows me to cultivate this continuity is this one quality. And one story about this, there's a quote I'd like to share with you from John Cage. Probably some of you know the avant-garde. He liked to call himself an inventor. He really is a composer that composed many different musical pieces. And his probably most famous composition or invention was this composition called 4:33, which lasted for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. And the score of that musical piece was, it was written for any number of musicians and musical instruments. So it could be a whole symphony to one musician. And the other part of the score was only one instruction. And that was for the musicians not to play. So typical John Cage. And I want to come back to this because I think what he said about this piece was really interesting. And a famous quote of his is, he says, I'm trying to become unfamiliar with what I'm doing. And to me, that's the heart of this quality of continuity, is can I become unfamiliar with what it's like to stand or to sit down? What does that feel like? What is it like to actually open a door? Or what is it like right now to hear in the background the sound of the hot water urn? To become unfamiliar with those experiences. That's really what we're trying to do. And the whole, one of his intentions with this composition of 4:33 was for us to become unfamiliar of what we deem to be music. To really noticing the musicality of ambient sound and bringing that in. So it wasn't just a gimmick. He was really trying to allow us to become unfamiliar with our experience. And also allow us to become unfamiliar with these notions of music, to step out of that confinement. So here we have it, the sila aspect, the samadhi. What I've been talking about is around samadhi. And then punya, which we began to explore last night. Wisdom. And I situated it in the Four Noble Truths of starting to examine suffering. This is just, of course, just a small piece of a way of understanding, practicing the Four Noble Truths. And last night I had you reflect on, the gift that you're given through your challenges. How is that a gem? Which in and of itself can be a journey to really begin to understand that. And the other piece I just began to touch upon last night was also beginning to relate to our suffering or our challenges differently. As I said, there's the suffering that leads to more suffering and the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. So we're trying to turn the rudder so the challenges and difficulties can allow for us to be in the world in a different way, so that we can see that the separation is the link. And this leads us to another word that you find in Buddhism, early Buddhism, is you have two main efforts in Buddhism, in early Buddhism. One is what I've been talking about, cultivation. I've been talking about that again, to cultivate, to develop. And we find this in the Four Noble Truths. What is cultivated? The Eightfold Path is cultivated. But also another important aspect of what we're doing here is to abandon, is the process of abandoning. And this is really quite important. And you find this really the same quote that I shared with you around cultivating the wholesome or cultivating the skillful. And then the Buddha really says the same exact thing around abandoning the unskillful. He says, abandon what is unskillful, practitioners. It is possible to abandon what is unskillful, which is important to remember. If it were not possible to abandon what is unskillful, I would not say to you, abandon what is unskillful. But because it is possible to abandon what is unskillful, I say to you, abandon what is unskillful. If this abandoning of what is unskillful were conducive to harm and pain, I would not say to you, abandon what is unskillful. But because this abandoning of what is unskillful is conducive to benefit, is conducive to pleasure, I say to you, abandon what is unskillful. So what is this abandoning? And it can feel so different because, we always talk about just being present with whatever's arising. Then it feels like, oh, does that mean I have to do something now in my meditation? What are we doing here? I haven't heard about this word. And again, it's something that's kind of left out from kind of the modern discourse around mindfulness. So just one story about this that might be helpful. Maybe the image that the Buddha gives around this, which I think is interesting, the image that he gives around abandoning is he says it's like a seafaring ship that has been marooned on a beach. And as it's marooned on the beach, over the years, the wind and the rain and the sun begin to wear away the rigging on that ship, and then it just begins to fall away, like the sails and the ropes. And what I love about that image is that it's just this organic process that naturally happens, that things begin to fall away. So this is what we're exploring in this this willingness to be present, is allowing things to fall away in this sense. So I remember I was on a long retreat on the East Coast, a place called the Forest Refuge, and this was, I guess it was not decades ago, but I was on this retreat and I started this long retreat. I was really excited about it. And as the days went on at the beginning of the retreat, I realized I had brought someone with me on the retreat. You ever had that experience? You're on the retreat and that person feels like that person's following you around. They're just in your head, that conversation with that person. And boy, I was having so many conversations with this person, so many conversations I wanted to have with this person. And it was so frustrating because I was like, I did not come on this retreat to bring this person in particular on retreat. Like, I wanted to go on retreat because they weren't going to be there. So it was a drag. And that's the way it kind of felt, is like I'd be meditating and be like, here they are again. What's up with this? This is so challenging. I did not come on this retreat for this. And so then I started to engage in this process of the practice that we're doing. And I had to first do the first step that I talked to you about last night, of eventually saying, oh yes, this too is my practice. This is what this is the thing that feels like it's separating me from my practice. I feel like I can't meditate because this person is with me here in my head. Oh, this is the heart of what I'm doing. That was the first step. And then it was beginning to feel into this dilemma. And noticing really what it consisted of. And this is really important, I think, for dilemmas in terms of meditation. Really what was going on? It was thoughts arising. So an image of that person might arise, or words from them or from myself towards them. Those are just thoughts. Then sensations intermixed with that, and then emotion that was there, whether it be the sadness or the hurt or the anger. That's all it was. It was nothing more than that. And all I needed to do was to simply notice it, to be with it. So I want to point out that in terms of abandoning, I'm not getting rid of anything. I'm actually not even letting go of anything. So this is important. As one teacher, Saito Utejaniya, says, your job is not to let go. That's not the practice instructions. Your job is to be present. Like, remember, I've invited you to be aware of what's going on and to accept what's going on. I haven't said anything about you need to let go. And the way he words it, which I appreciate, is that that's your job. It's wisdom's job to let go. It's not your job. Wisdom will do its job when it will do its job. But you have to remember, you're not the manager of wisdom. Wisdom comes when it wants to. You know, it's one of those contractors that has its own rhythm. Maybe you know that experience. So you have to be patient. Wisdom works on its schedule, not on your schedule. But the other aspect that I needed to notice is I needed to, and this is where we need to have the capacity, is I needed to feel the pain of grasping, the pain of my aversion to all this. This was so important, to begin to feel how my mind was creating this pain around this, because my resistance around it, I was fighting with it. And I'd fight with it in all kinds of ways. Wow, I'm doing something wrong. There's something wrong with me. I can't do this practice. If I was a better practitioner, I would be over this by now. All of these things, rather than just seeing, oh, this is just the dynamic of suffering. So this is another important aspect. Why take it personally? As I said in the first Rican retreat, it'd be like taking a hailstorm, you know, when it's destroying our squash plants in Flagstaff in the summer. This is what happens when you cultivate things. But it's beginning to feel the pain of it, because that's what allows wisdom to do its work. Because I start to see that it's not worth investing in that pain. Of course, it takes a while for my body to get that, but I start to realize that this isn't worth being entangled with. But the way I do that is I need to notice it and feel into it moment after moment. I'm not trying to get rid of it. This is so important. I'm trying to loosen around it. And then it's just like when when I'm holding on to this and there's a loosening, it doesn't mean that that mallet goes away, but the relationship is different. And if I'm looking, if I'm judging how my practice is going, depending on if the mallet is gone or not, that's just a setup. I mean, because some mallets in my life just might come up for the rest of my life. So what? That's not where the suffering is. The suffering is how the heart is relating to it. It fits so well with that Groundhog Day movie. Do you see that? It's just that. It doesn't matter what's there. It's how you're relating to it. And then this abandoning begins to do its work, because the heart stops investing in those patterns, those habits, those particular ways of relating to our experience. For example, like those people that you keep in your head all the time. The aversion and the grasping. It's kind of like the one teacher I so appreciated this example. They said it's kind of like these unskillful habits of the mind, like your self-doubt, the shame, you know, the fear that keeps you confined. They're just like these visitors. And the thing is that you've gotten in the habit of serving them really good coffee and donuts. And so they just are being reinforced to come back. It's like, wow, this mind is a cool mind to hang out in, because like they serve really good donuts and coffee and like all the time. Sometimes it's like all day long. And then like even in the middle of the night, you know, in the middle of the night, sometimes there'll be a good cup of coffee that they'll just put out there like at 3 o'clock in the morning so we can dance around and sing our tune. And it's not like I get rid of them. It's just that you stop putting out the good coffee and the donuts. So they're just not so interested in hanging out in your mind, you know? And they just go look for another mind, like the person next to you or something like that. You know? That's all we're doing, is we're just deciding not to serve them, not to fuel them anymore. And then they're not so interested in hanging out. That's the process of abandoning. You see how that's different than this thing of like, I need to get rid of this, and how radically different it is from getting rid of. So abandonment, when you hear this, to remember that it's not about seeing that an experience is quote unquote bad. It's just seeing what an experience is. It's not about having this narrative, I shouldn't be feeling this way, or I should get over this. And as I've said, it's not about trying to get rid of. It's all about having a different relationship. How you relate to what's arising. And I want to share with you a poem by Mary Oliver that exemplifies this. And kind of in honor of her, many of you know she died just over 2 weeks ago. And I think she wrote this soon after her partner died. Her partner died in 2005. Her partner was this really striking photographer. And she begins, "The time I could not go any closer to grief without dying, I went closer and I did not die. Surely God has his hand in this as well as friends. Still, I was bent and my laughter, as the poet said, was nowhere to be found. Then said my friend Daniel, brave even among lions, it's not the weight you carry, but how you carry it. Books, bricks, grief, it's all in the way you embrace it, balance it, carry it, when you cannot and would not put it down. So I went practicing. Have you noticed? Have you heard the laughter that comes now and again out of my startled mouth? How I linger to admire and admire the things of this world that are kind and maybe also troubled. Roses in the wind, the sea geese on the steep wave, a love to which there is no reply. It's not the weight you carry, rather, it's how you carry it. So again, I invite you to keep it very simple today. Right? Just feeling the breathing, experiencing what it's like to walk, feeling the sensations on the bottoms of your feet, hearing the sound of my voice coming and going, noticing an emotion arise or passing away, or a mood, if there's a mood that's a little more sleepy or down, or a mood that's agitated, just to notice that. Right? To practice the skill of being with it, like that wise grandparent. So I also want to take some time this morning to talk a little bit about ritual, because we're going to be doing the Kuan Yin chanting and bowing ritual again this morning. And so I want to share a little bit about that. And then we're going to have some ritual and ceremony time this afternoon as well. And I want to mention it just because sometimes for our modern sensibilities, it can be difficult to relate to ritual, and so I think it's good to reflect on it. And also, for some people, you know, I think some people come to Buddhism because of what I would call religious wounding, in the sense of being brought up in a religion that didn't resonate, and then it gets associatively linked, that quality of religious wounding, to ritual. And I think that can be unfortunate. Yeah, and I think there's a place for ritual. Actually, it's more complex than that. There's a whole critique about why modern sensibilities have let go of ritual, but we won't go there right now. I mean, it has to do, in some ways, of how we know experience and what we value in terms of ways of knowing. Like, we value scientific ways of knowing, but then what gets diminished is sometimes sometimes other ways of knowing, like indigenous ways of knowing, ways of knowing that are more connected with the feminine often get downplayed as well. I mean, this is what has happened in our society in that way. There's actually a term for it. It's more around indigenous ways of knowing, epistemicide, which is epistemology is the exploration of different ways of knowing, and epistemicide is the killing of certain ways of knowing. And I don't share this with you. At the same time, I want to be really clear. When we engage in ritual this morning and this afternoon, for some of you, it might just not work, and that there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just exposing you to ways, to different ways of practicing, and then you have to decide, because what's important is that it's relevant for you. So you decide. I'm just sharing with you a different aspects of practice. So in light of that, in this next walking meditation, we'll have a brief time to do walking meditation, and then After a half hour at 10:30, we'll begin the Kuan Yin chanting and bowing practice here, which is a kind of ritual. And I want to share with you some words from Anne Klein, who is, I think, down at Rice University right now, but she's a well-known Tibetan translator and also interpreter, and really a fine practitioner, and is written really interesting things kind of at the crossroads of Buddhism and feminism, and looking at the kind of patriarchal things that have kind of sometimes infused Buddhism. So this is what she says about ritual, which fits with, she's talking about this ritual that happens around Tara, but I'm just going to use the word Kuan Yin to make it fit for what we're doing. She says, ritual practice, like the one that we'll be engaging in this morning and this afternoon, is more about what we do than what we think, which is important. So it's this act of moving the body in a particular way, or chanting, or doing other ritual acts. We don't have to intellectually determine that Kuan Yin is an actual being, which is important. We don't have to reject her either. We don't have to decide anything. In the liminal space of a human imagination, we can simply hear the story of Kuan Yin, hear the qualities of Kuan Yin, and let it resonate for us, open a door to some capacity for spacious tenderness that we didn't know we had. And I believe this is is close to the way traditional peoples regard such tales. That is, while perfectly aware of the difference between real world functioning and fantasy, traditional practitioners are not perpetually on the lookout for a place to draw the line between facts and other felt realities, or between an objective external world and a subjective internal one. To consciously abide in that spacious, undecided realm is to allow ourselves to be touched by our own practice in very deep ways. We can enjoy Kuan Yin's presence, which we'll do in just a little while, for example, and grow more fully to inhabit her or our qualities in a way that is palpable in these minds and bodies. And at the same time, in bowing to Kuan Yin, we are bowing to the awakened tenderness already within us. We are not surrendering to a fiction. We are present at the dawning of something new in our own experience. So maybe having that sense when we engage in these other practices this morning and this afternoon.